All right, so Matt, we've gotten some requests for me to tell some jokes in another language. So,
okay.
So here's one in Spanish.
All right.
Uno.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales.
All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm good, man.
Good.
I'm good.
Good. So before we get into it, we'll say go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales. Sign up to become a patron. You can even scan that little QR code thing that's up above my head over here, and it'll take you directly to Patreon. We've got three different levels, and we think that any level you choose, you're going to love. But if you do the $1 a month, you get a short Patreon bonus episode a month. And it's usually like a miniature Graveyard Tales episode. If it's something that we don't have enough to do an hour, hour and a half on a main episode, we'll put it on a Patreon episode. Same kind of content, same thought there. But if you move up to five, then you get the audio and video version of that Patreon episode, plus you get ad-free audio and video versions of the main episode as well. Then if you move up to 10, you get all of that, plus you get the audio and video versions of our second show, Side Quest. And Side Quest is a fun little side quest for me and Matt. It's like this is our main path in the video game. And then we have opened a door and, oh, hey, look, Side Quest. Here's me and Matt talking about who knows what for who knows how long. We range from eating weird stuff to drinking weird sodas to playing games. Sometimes I tell Matt some stories about people surviving things they shouldn't have survived. Matt likes to bring trivia to it because mm-hmm. Matt is a trivia master and I am an idiot. So it works out really well for humor there if you're into it. It's a more comedic and behind the scenes kind of thing if you're interested in that with me and Matt. But we think any level you pick, you're going to enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. We think it's a great value for the bonus content you get. So go check it out. We really think you'll enjoy it.
Yep. And while you're online checking it out, share Graveyard Tales with somebody. Share it with your best friend. If your best friend does not listen to Graveyard Tales, why? Get them listening to it. If your arch nemesis doesn't listen to Graveyard Tales, go tell them to listen to Graveyard Tales, and then if you want to smack
them in the face,
yeah, you can do that too. But just tell them to listen to Graveyard Tales. Share the show. We haven't said it in a while, but we are an independent podcast. We don't run off advertisements from a corporation like other shows do. We don't get pushed on any show that we're not friends with and share a recommendation from one another. So you guys have grown us to this point after about 9 years, and we appreciate that very much, and we would like to grow the graveyard even more. So go out there and share it. If you've got a random sticker, I am not condoning sticking it on anything that shouldn't have stickers on it. But, you know, like at my barber shop, they got a cabinet of stickers. Put a Graveyard Tale sticker on there, you know, if you have something like that. But just share Graveyard Tales and let's get more people into the graveyard, because it'll be here before we know it. But our end of year listener stories episode is coming up. And the more of y'all in the graveyard, the more stories we get.
That's right.
The more work it is for Adam to put it all together. So you want to make me work, right? So make me work, make me sweat getting these stories together. So on that note, Matt, why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
Okay, so tonight we're headed to one of the most historic and, according to many folks, one of the most haunted cities in the southern United States, and that's Natchez, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking about these grand antebellum mansions, streets that are centuries old, and history that's just full of war and mystery and tragedy. I mean, it is no surprise that stories of restless spirits have lingered here for generations.
Yeah.
I mean, from a former general who may still patrol the home that he loved to a mansion where phantom harp music echoes through empty halls. I mean, there are so many just wild, unique, and scary stories that come out of places in Natchez, Mississippi that we thought taking the time to talk about some of these places would be great. So we're going to talk about some haunted inns, hotels. Yep. I don't really use the term inn much anymore.
You know?
So when you say it in normal speech, it sounds kind of weird.
Yeah. Unless you're talking about like a budget inn, you know, we don't normally say that.
Yeah. Well, I don't ever refer to a hotel or a motel as an inn anymore, you know, unless I'm telling somebody that there's no room at the inn, you know, that's just kind of a phrase.
Or you're singing that song, Hotel, Motel, Holiday Inn.
Yeah, right. Unless it's in the name of the place.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, we're going to talk about a couple of those. And we even found more places that we can't cram into one show.
Right.
So look for other shows coming up about places in Natchez. Okay. But I mean, sit back and enjoy this one, because there are still some spirits that are lingering around Natchez.
So, oh yeah.
So Adam, I think we're going to start with the Monmouth Inn tonight. So, and I know that that place has some very rich history. So Adam's going to dig into the history, and I'm going to share some of the haunted experiences that people have had while visiting the Monmouth. So,
Right. So as we always say, go check our sources down in the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all the information. Everything we talk about is going to be sourced and referenced down in our show notes. Now, had I not spent basically a day rewriting my my notes here, we would have to do 3 episodes on just the Monmouth, one and a half of them being just the history.
Yeah.
So if it's another one of those places where you're like, man, I live in Natchez and you didn't talk about that. I know this about the Monmouth. You're probably right.
Yeah.
I just had to keep it to some of the highlights and the things that pertain to Matt's portion of the episode as much as possible and cut out some of the other stuff.
Yeah. Remember back, if for those of you that have been with us all these years, remember when we used to say we're giving you the Cliff Notes version of some of this stuff? That's definitely the case tonight.
Right. For sure. And we'll get to the end of the history and you go, that was the Cliff Notes version? Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Now, if you've ever been to Natchez, Mississippi, you know it doesn't feel like most southern towns. There's towering oak trees draped in Spanish moss that line the quiet streets. And then there's magnificent antebellum mansions that Matt mentioned that seem frozen in time. And it's easy to admire the beauty of the city, but beneath that beauty is much more of a complicated story. Now, before the Civil War, Natchez was one of the wealthiest cities in America. Cotton created fortunes almost overnight, attracting politicians, businessmen, lawyers, and plantation owners from across the country. Grand homes became symbols of success, but that wealth came at an enormous human cost. Those elegant mansions were financed by slavery and built and maintained by enslaved men and women, whose stories are just as much a part of Natchez's history as the families who own them. Tonight, we're going to look at one of the city's most remarkable homes, and that's the Monmouth. So today, the Monmouth is known as a luxury historic inn that's surrounded by beautifully restored gardens. Guests come from around the world to experience its elegance and its history, but over the past two centuries, this house has witnessed political power, military glory, personal tragedy, economic collapse, and enormous social change. So long before anyone spoke of ghosts, Monmouth had already accumulated enough history to last for several lifetimes. That is the absolute truth if you look at my original notes. But before the mansion was ever built, this land belonged to someone else. For centuries, the bluffs overlooking the Mississippi River were home to the Natchez people, a highly organized society whose villages thrived along the fertile riverbanks. Their civilization flourished until European colonization brought conflict. After a series of violent clashes with the French in the early 1700s, the Natchez people were largely destroyed or scattered, leaving behind the land that would eventually become one of the richest regions in the American South. Control of Natchez passed from France to Great Britain, then to Spain, and finally to the United States. Each new government recognized the same thing. This land was incredibly valuable. So the rich soil and easy access to the Mississippi River made the region perfect for growing cotton, and by the early 19th century, Natchez had exploded into a booming center of commerce. Some historians believe it was the wealthiest city in America on a per capita basis before the Civil War. And it was during this period that an ambitious attorney named John Hackinson decided to build his dream home. Hackinson was a lawyer, a businessman, a postmaster, and an investor in the rapidly growing steamboat industry. As Natchez prospered, so did he. In 1818, only a year after Mississippi had become a state, Hackinson began building a country estate just outside the city, naming it Monmouth, after Monmouth County, New Jersey, where he had spent much of his early life. The original Monmouth was much smaller than the mansion that visitors see today. It was a refined federal-style home with eight principal rooms, surrounded by service buildings that included a detached kitchen, smokehouse, dairy, gardens, and living quarters for the people responsible for keeping the estate running. Now, Matt, I would love to have my own dairy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
wouldn't cool. you?
Fresh you butter.
Fresh butter, fresh milk. I just bought some Amish butter.
Yeah.
The other day, we went out to East Texas with my dad, and there's an Amish market.
Yeah.
And they had some butter. Mm-hmm. Holy cow, man. That's even better than the Kerrygold stuff we like.
My parents drive to Kentucky to buy Amish butter.
It's
I
worth
mean,
it.
I don't know. Actually, I take that back. I don't know if it's specifically Amish butter that they buy. And it's not really Amish. It's Mennonites.
Yeah.
But there is a butter man that brings fresh butter. I don't know if he is a Mennonite or if he's just a local that sells his butter there. But anyway,
you know, it is butter fantastic. Butter man was my nickname in high school. Sorry, go
so
ahead.
So many nicknames in high school. Yeah. I mean, but I mean, anyway, they go up there because the butter is so good,
dude. Yeah.
And they bring it back, and we've got a little farm market up the road from the house that, you know, they sell that big roll of butter. It's expensive, yep. And I'm a cheapskate, so I don't.
I know. It hurt me to spend that on it, but it was worth it. But yeah, a home dairy would be great. Anyway, I digress. Like every prosperous estate of its time, Monmouth depended on enslaved labor from the very beginning. Enslaved craftsmen likely helped construct the house itself. Afterward, enslaved men, women, and children maintained the property, prepared meals, cared for livestock, cleaned the home, tended the gardens, and performed virtually every task required for daily life. The comfort enjoyed by the owner came through the labor of the people. Now, ironically, John Hackinson would enjoy his dream home for only a short time. Not long after Monmouth was completed, Hackinson died unexpectedly. How many times have we heard that, Matt?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, always.
We do a haunted place, and it was this guy's dream ambition to build this house for him and his family. And then right after it, he dies. So I think the lesson to take, the Graveyard Tales PSA, don't build your dream home. I think that's just what we got to take away, is because you probably die. But maybe not. Maybe I'm just a little pessimistic, but you know. Now, his wife also passed away soon afterward, leaving the estate without the family who had envisioned it. So the property was eventually placed up for auction, passing briefly through other hands before attracting the attention of a young lawyer whose ambitions reached far beyond Natchez. His name was John Anthony Quitman, and under his ownership, Monmouth would be transformed from a modest country villa into one of the grandest estates in Mississippi. While its owner would become one of the most influential and controversial figures in the state's history. Now, when John Anthony Quitman purchased Monmouth in the 1820s, he was still a rising attorney with enormous ambitions, like I said, but few could have predicted that the quiet estate outside Natchez would eventually become the home of one of Mississippi's most famous political and military leaders. Quitman had been born in Rhinebeck, New York in 1798. His father was a German immigrant, and after studying law, the young attorney headed south in search of opportunity. Mississippi was still a young state at the time, and Natchez was quickly becoming one of the fastest growing and wealthiest cities in America. Now, for someone with talent and ambition, it was a perfect place to build a career. So Quitman quickly established himself as a successful lawyer and married Eliza Turner, the daughter of a prominent Natchez family, and his reputation grew. He purchased Monmouth and began transforming both the property and his own place in Mississippi society. Over the next three decades, Monmouth changed dramatically. The modest federal-style villa that John Hackinson had built slowly evolved into the magnificent Greek Revival mansion that visitors will see today. Expansive galleries shaded the home from the Mississippi heat. Elegant staircases welcomed distinguished guests, and beautiful landscape gardens spread across more than 26 acres. Now, by the 1850s, Monmouth had become more than a family residence. It was a symbol of status. In antebellum Natchez, homes like Monmouth weren't simply places to live. They were statements of wealth, influence, and success. Politicians, judges, military officers, businessmen, prominent planters, all of them passed through its doors. Lavish dinners and important conversations filled its rooms as Natchez reached the height of its prosperity. Now, one of the best-known individuals to be connected to Monmouth was Harry Nichols. Harry served as Quitman's personal valet, and it placed him closer to one of Mississippi's most powerful men than almost anyone else. Unlike many of the enslaved workers who never left the plantation, Harry traveled alongside Quitman during some of the defining moments of American history. He accompanied him during the Texas Revolution and later throughout the Mexican-American War. Now, imagine everything Harry witnessed: political meetings, military camps, long journeys by steamboat and horseback, the chaos of war, and celebrities that followed the victory and showed up at the house. He experienced history from a perspective few others could. Now, one of the most remarkable artifacts connected to Monmouth is a daguerreotype believed to show Harry Nichols. Photographs from the 1840s were still rare, and surviving images of enslaved people are even rarer. And more than 175 years later, that portrait offers a direct connection to a man whose story might otherwise have been lost. Which I thought that was interesting when I looked into that, Matt, the daguerreotype that they still have of him.
Yeah, yeah. For those of you listening, I am trying my hardest not to make a Harry Nichols joke. Family show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. what we'll do is put a pin in that and then join us on SideQuest where Matt can make that joke.
I will let loose all of the Harry Nichols jokes said right now.
Might I say, let's just move on from talking about my Harry Nichols. All right, so this episode is sponsored by 11 Labs. Now, the other day, I had to call a customer support line for something, and I got the automated AI voice. And it kept leading me through the same troubleshooting options over and over and over. And I kept having to say, let me speak to a human. And this went on, Matt, for like an hour until I could finally get it resolved. Now, if they had had 11 agents by 11 labs, this wouldn't have been a problem at all. AI is showing up just about everywhere these days. But one of the coolest uses that we've seen is realistic voice technology. If you've ever heard an AI voice that made you stop and wonder if it was actually a real person, there's a good chance it came from 11 Labs. They're known for creating incredibly expressive, natural-sounding AI voices that don't have that robotic feel that we've all gotten used to, the typical AI voice. But they've gone way beyond simple text-to-speech. Their new 11 agents can actually listen, respond, and carry on full conversations in real time, and they can do it in more than 30 languages with very little delay. So that opens the door for all kinds of uses, whether it's customer support, sales, or building custom voice experiences for your business. It's easy to see why so many companies are using them. In just about 4 years, they've grown to over 4 million AI agents deployed, and they've reached an impressive $500 million in annual recurring revenue. They also meet enterprise-level security standards, including SOC 2, HIPAA, and PCI compliance.
Yeah, if you run a business with any kind of customer operation, support, sales, onboarding, you can start with a demo at 11labs.io/grave. Now, see what 11 agents can do for your specific workflows. Guided rollout capacity is limited each quarter, so if you want to be one of the first companies with a customer experience that people actually talk about in a good way, now is the time. 11labs.io/grave. That's ELEVENLABS.io/grave.
So, plantation records also preserve the names of other enslaved residents, including Aunt Dicey, who cared for the Quitman children, and Belle and Viola Vessels, who worked inside the household. We know only fragments of their lives, but those fragments remind us that Monmouth's history belongs to not just the family that owned the estate, but everybody that was there during its... I mean, there were so many people on that estate over the years that the paranormal activity that could have been left from these people is just crazy.
You know, and those names sound like something from an old Disney film about the Monmouth Inn.
Yeah. Belle and Viola. Aunt
Viola Vessels and Aunt Dicey.
Aunt Dicey,
That sounds like something from like, you know, a live action Disney movie from the 50s, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I can see it being said in like a British type, New Englander type accent.
Yeah.
Do you talk to Aunt Dicey?
Or that the old Southern character from Bugs Bunny? You know?
Oh
like,
yeah.
Belvedere, come here, boy.
Yeah. Right. Viola. Now, while Monmouth was growing into one of Natchez's finest homes, Quitman's own career was expanding just as rapidly. He served in the Mississippi legislature and became Speaker of the House, later served as a judge, and developed a reputation as one of the state's most capable political leaders. But it was war that would make him famous. When the Mexican-American War began in 1846, Quitman accepted a commission in the United States Army. He quickly distinguished himself as a capable commander, helping lead the assault on Veracruz before advancing with American forces toward Mexico City. His greatest military achievement came during the Battle of Chapultepec, I think.
I'll buy it.
Yeah.
Better than I would have done by far.
I did not pronounce that, so I apologize. The heavily fortified castle overlooking Mexico City represented one of the final obstacles before the American capture of the capital. Quitman's troops fought their way up the hill under intense resistance, and after the battle, American forces entered Mexico City victorious. So this achievement transformed Quitman into a national hero. He was appointed military governor of Mexico City, one of the highest honors any American officer received during the war, and newspapers across the country celebrated his accomplishments. And when he returned to Natchez, he was no longer simply John Quitman. He was General John A. Quitman. Now, steamboats arrived at the Natchez landing carrying newspapers filled with stories of his victories, and neighbors were eager to shake a general's hand. Visitors making the journey to Monmouth just to meet one of the country's newest military heroes was kind of crazy, in my opinion. Now, for a time, Monmouth stood at the center of both Mississippi politics and national attention. Quitman later served as governor of Mississippi and represented the state in Congress, making Monmouth a gathering place where political leaders, military officers, and influential citizens discussed the issues shaping a rapidly changing nation. Now, by the late 1850s, the nation stood on the edge of a conflict that would forever change Natchez, Monmouth, and every family connected to the estate. Before the Civil War began, tragedy would strike the Quitman family itself. For all of John Anthony Quitman's success, there was one thing that he could never conquer. That was time. By the late 1850s, he had accomplished more than most men could hope to achieve in a lifetime, and he had become celebrated as a military general, governor, congressman. He was one of the most recognizable figures in the state, and Monmouth had grown into one of Natchez's finest estates, seemingly representing everything that the Old South believed would last forever. But history rarely allows anything to remain unchanged. So in 1858, Quitman's health began to fail. Years of public service, military campaigns, and overseeing his plantation had taken their toll. On July 17, 1858, he died at Monmouth at just 59 years old. Man, that I know it was 1858, but when I was younger, 59 would have seemed old.
Oh, yeah.
That's not that far for me.
But look at what all he did in 59 years.
That's crazy. That's true.
He was involved in so much and he didn't even make it to 60.
Yeah, and that stuff that nowadays to be a general and all that, you don't normally make it to general until you're almost 60.
Yeah.
Admiral till you're almost 60.
Right.
So
things were different.
Oh, yeah.
That's the answer to that always. Things were different back then.
Things were different.
You got married when you were 12.
Yeah.
You know, started having babies when you were 16, and you died when you were 30. And that's the way we liked it.
Yeah, and that was the good old days.
That don't sound so good to me, you know?
Right? Sound like old days, but how are they good old days?
You didn't have indoor plumbing. How could it have been great?
Right, you know? And no central AC. Here's the thing, man. I would deal with a chamber pot if I had AC.
I've dealt with a chamber pot with AC, you know.
Yeah, right.
It wasn't by design.
You know? No, but you know, it was much easier than without AC, right?
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah.
If it had been burning up in there, that chamber pot would have stank.
Mm-hmm. Man.
Now, his death was mourned throughout Mississippi. Newspapers praised his military victories and political leadership, while friends and colleagues remembered a man who had helped shape the state's early history. For his family, however, the loss was deeply personal. The house that had once welcomed governors, generals, and politicians suddenly became much quieter. Only a year later, Quitman's wife, Eliza, also passed away, leaving their daughters to care for the estate. As heartbreaking as those losses were, an even greater tragedy was already unfolding across the nation. The United States was coming apart. So for years, debates over slavery and states' rights had pushed North and South further apart. And then after Abraham Lincoln was elected in 1860, Mississippi voted to secede from the Union, and before long, the Civil War had begun. So like many southern cities, Natchez sent its young men off to war to fight, and families anxiously waited for news from distant battlefields, uncertain what the future would hold. Well, unlike cities such as Vicksburg, Atlanta, and Richmond, Natchez escaped widespread destruction. So you remember we talked about some other haunted places in the South, in Mississippi, and they were basically sitting in a destroyed city. Natchez was not that way. Union forces occupied the city in 1863, but there was relatively little fighting, leaving many of its magnificent homes, including Monmouth, standing as much as they had before the war. But while the buildings survived, the society that created them did not. So the Civil War ended slavery, and it brought freedom to the men and women and children who had worked on the estate of Monmouth, and almost overnight, everything changed. So the fortunes that had built Natchez began to disappear. The cotton profits declined, labor systems shifted, and maintaining enormous country estates became increasingly difficult. Families who had once entertained lavishly now struggled simply to keep their homes standing. So the Quitman family managed to hold on to Monmouth for many years, but the estate slowly slipped into decline. Gardens became harder to maintain, buildings aged, the grand gatherings that had once filled the mansion became little more than memories. Now, when the last of Quitman's daughters died in 1914, nearly a century of family ownership came to an end. Over the decades that followed, Monmouth passed through several owners, and like many historic Southern homes, it faced an uncertain future. Across the South, a lot of these antebellum mansions were demolished. They were abandoned if they weren't demolished, or they got destroyed by fire. And for a time, Monmouth seemed like it was going to be end up the same way. But fortunately, history took a different turn. In 1978, Ronald and Lainey Riches purchased the aging estate and committed themselves to an ambitious restoration. Using historic photographs, architectural research, and surviving records, they carefully returned Monmouth to the appearance it had enjoyed during the Quitman years. It was a lot of work, they said, but original furnishings had disappeared, rooms had been altered over the years, and decades of neglect had left their mark on the property. But little by little, Monmouth was brought back to life. Everything was restored, and the mansion once again reflected the elegance that had made it famous more than a century earlier. Now, rather than becoming a museum frozen in time, Monmouth found a new purpose as a historic inn. Today, visitors can spend the night in rooms where governors, generals, and generations of family once lived, and they can walk beneath these old oak trees, explore beautifully restored gardens, and experience one of the finest surviving examples of antebellum architecture in the South. Monmouth has now stood for more than 200 years. That's a long time in America.
Yeah, really. I mean, we don't have buildings that old typically.
No. It seems like a short time to Europeans who have buildings that are 700 years old.
Yeah.
You know, or castles or that are 2,000.
Thousands of years old. We don't have that here.
No. So 200 years is a long time for a house or anything in the United States. If you think about it, we just celebrated 250 years of the nation.
Yeah.
So it's been around almost as long as the nation of United States has been.
But you can see it's taken some work, you know, to ensure that it lasted that long.
For sure. Now, maybe that's why Monmouth continues to capture people's imaginations. History has a way of leaving its fingerprints on a place. Every family leaves behind memories. Every celebration, tragedy, every quiet conversation, every final goodbye that's said in that house becomes another layer in a home story. So for more than two centuries, Monmouth has been a home to all of the famous people of the area. Now, there are stories surrounding this house that can't be found in deeds, census records, or old newspaper clippings. And these stories have been passed from guest to guest, from employee to employee, and from one generation to the next. Now, whether they're simply legends born from the crazy history or there's something more, we need to look into.
Yeah. And so while Adam covered the history of Monmouth, let's talk about what people say happens there after the sun goes down. Now, if you've listened to Graveyard Tales for any amount of time, you know there's one thing that we hear over and over when it comes to historic homes. The owner loved the place so much that he just never left.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly the legend surrounding Monmouth. The man at the center of almost every ghost story is General John A. Quitman. Now,
Sure. Now,
Adam already told you about Quitman's impressive career, but one detail really stands out when you look at the hauntings. He wasn't just another wealthy landowner. He poured his time, money, and energy into turning Monmouth into one of the grandest homes in Natchez. It literally was his pride and joy.
Right.
So when reports started surfacing that a man in period clothing was still walking around the halls, people didn't have to think very hard as to who that might be.
No.
Yeah. And interestingly, most of the ghost stories didn't really take off until the mansion underwent a major restoration in the late 1970s, which how many times have we seen that?
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's something about restoration of an old building that stirs up those spirits, whether it's because they don't like what's happening, maybe they appreciate what's happening, or maybe it's one of those things that, you know, the hustle and bustle of daily life, people don't pay attention to things. And as soon as workers are spending time, maybe alone or in small groups inside mm-hmm. a home, they begin to notice things that the routine traffic doesn't necessarily see.
Right, right.
Now, that's where we're going now. Workers restoring the home started hearing heavy footsteps echoing through the upper floors. So naturally, they just thought someone was walking around upstairs. No big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd stop what they were doing and go look, because if everybody on your crew is accounted for and there's someone knocking around upstairs, you know, your first thought is, uh-oh, somebody's upstairs that doesn't belong there, or there's someone here that could get injured, you know, with all this construction, you know, something we need to investigate. We know none of us are there, so let's go up there and look. Nobody.
Huh.
You know, and I need to clarify, this is the attic that we're talking about. Okay.
Right.
So you wouldn't necessarily think it's, you know, somebody's up there working in the attic if you're looking around and going, everybody's here. Did we send someone to the attic for something? No. Well, what the heck is going on up there?
Yeah. And, you sure we didn't send an apprentice up there as a joke?
Yeah. did we tell somebody to go up there looking for blinker fluid or something stupid? You know, what are we hearing?
The canooner valve is leaking. Yeah, go check it
out.
That's
right. And the hallways were empty, but the footsteps kept coming. Now, several workers on different crews reported hearing the exact same thing. Slow, deliberate footsteps that sounded more like heavy boots than an old house settling. The stories became so common that someone eventually joked that General Quitman was just making sure they were restoring his house correctly. But honestly, if I spent a fortune building my dream home and somebody showed up 100 years later with a pry bar and a Sawzall, I'd want to supervise that too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's not how I'd do it, but
now
you got the saw.
That's right. What's he doing with that sledgehammer?
Yeah, right.
The footsteps weren't the only reports, though. Workers also described feeling like someone was standing just behind them while they worked. They'd turn around expecting to find another member of the crew, only to discover they were completely alone. Some even claimed that tools would turn up in places they didn't remember leaving them. That's something we hear all the time. Tools going missing, stuff being moved, things being unplugged, all those kind of things factor in when you're doing a restoration on a house that all the residents may not be alive. I mean, just put it out there.
Always bring a couple spare tools and leave them in your truck.
Yeah, that's right. Because yours are going to go missing for a day or two.
Yeah, not just your 10-millimeter wrench either. It's going to be hammers and everything that doesn't normally go missing.
Yeah. But, I mean, to be fair, I've done enough DIY projects to know that I can lose a screwdriver if it's still in my hand, okay? I have hunted for hammer, screwdriver. I mean, I was looking for my drill earlier, and it is literally on the floor in front of me. I am not kidding you. I walked out of the room. It took me leaving the room and coming back to go, there it is. It was right there.
Yeah, I've done that. I've done that.
So, you know, that kind of stuff happens, but that's a DIY. I mean, you know, guys that work on construction crews and stuff, they're a lot more particular about their tools than I am. And you tend to know if your $300, you know, drill driver, you know where it is. And, you know, if you're going to leave it on a job site, which most guys won't, but if you do, you are going to remember exactly where you left it.
It's usually hooked on your belt.
Yeah. Too. You know, so if you come back and, you know, stuff's missing, you're kind of like, well, before I go down there and, you know, start accusing my coworkers, let's see.
I was
going to
say, that's
it.
How you start a fight that's on right. a construction site.
But
move somebody's tool.
But when you start combining disappearing tools and these phantom footsteps and this feeling of constantly being watched, it's easy to see why Monmouth developed this haunted reputation. And once the restoration was finished and overnight guests started arriving, the stories became even stranger. I mean, it wasn't just the restoration crews. Once Monmouth reopened as an inn, guests reported many of the same experiences, like their tools would go missing. But the most famous stories involved sighting of a man believed to be General John Quitman himself. Several guests have described seeing a tall gentleman dressed in 19th century clothing or what appeared to be a military uniform. Usually he's not doing anything dramatic. He's not rattling chains or floating through the wall. He's just standing in the hallway, or he's walking through the house, or he's looking out a window. But then he's gone. One room in particular seems to get mentioned more than the others, and that is room 30. Over the years, several guests have reported walking in the middle of the night to find a man standing silently near the bed. Now, I don't know about you, but I've said this before. I don't care if you're a ghost, if you're a burglar, I don't care if you're the Amazon guy. If I wake up and someone is standing next to my bed, we're both about to have a bad night.
Oh, yeah.
Ask any of my children. Because at some point in their early life, they did this. And you're laying there, you're asleep, and then you kind of start coming out of it. I think your brain knows. Your brain knows, no matter how quiet they are, that someone is looking at you when you are asleep.
Oh, yeah.
You know that thing, you know, we talk about, what is it? The pineal gland, is that the thing that it's like that your third eye or whatever, the thing that kind of lets you know? It's like the cats. You know, they say cats have this thing like lizards do. Brooks had a bearded dragon when he was a kid. And lizards have this thing that's like an eye on the back of their head because all of their predators are coming from above. And so they realize, and so that's why they said, don't ever try to grab your lizard from the top. Make sure they see you and they're coming because they think you're a predator coming from down. So, okay. So I think humans have this too. And it wakes up when you're dead asleep if somebody is standing staring at you.
Oh, yeah.
And you're laying there, and then your brain goes, hey, let's come out of this dream, okay? And then you're kind of floating, and then something in your head goes, something's looking at me. And then you open your eyes, and you confirm that there's somebody standing there looking at you, and you just about lose it, okay? I mean, it is... I am easily startled, and my whole family will hide and jump out and scare me. And I mean, there's videos of me saying the most god-awful things because I was startled, and this gets me in every way possible. Okay.
Well, why do kids have to be so quiet when they do that? Like I told Michael, I said, if you need something, that's fine. Come on. But make a little noise walking down the hall.
Yeah.
So I know you're coming. Don't just sneak up on us because we'll get in a knockdown, drag out fist fight with a 10-year-old. And
well, I know why my kids did it that way. They wanted to get in the bed with us. Okay. Mm. And at some point you just have to go, okay, you know, you can't sleep in here with mom and dad. Okay.
Yeah, right.
You know, you're 25. You got to get out. Yeah, of here, right. Okay. It's just, you're cramping my style, kid. No. They, at some point through all of their lives, they wanted to sleep with mom and dad. I guess most kids do, but you know, they want to get in the bed. They can't get in the bed. One of mine was really good. You'd wake up and you'd be like, oh my God, there's a kid. There's a hand on my face. Okay. And you didn't wake up. The rest of them, they would stare at you until you woke up and scared the bejesus out of you. You're half asleep. And now you're like, just get in, just get in the bed. Quit staring at me.
Right. Just go to sleep and don't kick me either, please.
Yeah. But the good thing for me and for visitors at the Monmouth that have experienced this, none of these encounters have been described as feeling threatening in any way, which I don't want to experience it, but I really don't want to experience it if it feels threatening, like if something's coming
after
me.
I think anybody staring at me in the middle of the night would feel threatening.
To a degree. I agree. Yes, I feel threatened.
Why is this grown man in a military uniform staring at me while I sleep? This feels wrong.
Yeah.
You know, there's something threatening about this. He's got a smile on his face. Yeah, that makes it worse.
Why is he smiling? Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell him to go away. Yeah. You tell him to go away.
Right. I'm gonna try to go back to sleep. I don't want to talk to him.
He's on your side of the bed. You deal with him.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to roll over.
Throw your chancleta at him. He'll go.
Most witnesses say that the figure just stands there for a few moments before disappearing, almost as if he's checking on the room before continuing his nightly rounds. And that's actually one of the things I find interesting about these Monmouth stories is General Quitman isn't described as being angry. He's not chasing anyone. He's not really trying to scare you. And if these reports are genuine, he seems more like a homeowner who's still convinced that this is his house. So maybe there's some level of confusion as to why are you sleeping in my house?
Yep. Why are you here? Why are you dressed like that? That's weird.
But the sightings aren't limited to just the mansion. Several visitors have reported seeing a lone gentleman walking through the gardens in the late evening. Considering the estate spans more than 20 acres of beautifully landscaped grounds, it is not hard to picture someone taking an evening stroll until you realize the man disappears before anyone can reach him. Huh. Other guests have reported hearing those same heavy footsteps from the upper floors even when no one else is staying nearby. Others describe doors opening on their own, sudden cold spots, or that familiar feeling that we've talked about so many times on this show that someone is watching you.
Mm-hmm.
That's because someone is watching you.
Yeah, right. Get that feeling because it's happening.
Yeah. There are eyes upon you, even if they're ghostly, and you know it.
Yep.
Now, they're...
The eyes of a ghost, they are upon you.
Is that a real song?
Yeah, the Walker Texas Ranger, but it's the eyes of a ranger.
Oh, I was like, that sounds familiar to me, but I don't remember. Yep. Okay.
I didn't want to sing anymore for copyright purposes, but, you know.
I have seen so many episodes of Walker Texas Ranger just being in a patient's house.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I never tuned in myself, but I think I've seen them all, not in order, but.
It was a good show. It was a good show.
It was all right. I didn't mind it. You know, now kick your leg 10 times. You know, we're going to see what Walker does this time.
Yep. After this, we'll see what Walker's up to, but you need to do this boot.
But all of this, there could be perfectly ordinary explanations. Okay. 100%. Old houses settle and historic buildings make weird noises. Mm-hmm. And if you spend the night in a mansion that's nearly two centuries old after hearing ghost stories all evening, your imagination may be working a little overtime. But what keeps Monmouth on so many haunted hotel lists isn't just one spectacular encounter. It's the consistency. I mean, for decades, different guests, different employees, and different restoration workers have all reported very similar experiences. Heavy footsteps, a dignified man in period clothing, a quiet presence walking the halls and gardens. Now, whether that's the spirit of General John Quitman or simply a good ghost story that's become part of Monmouth's history, you can decide. But I have always felt that sometimes quantity creates the quality.
Yeah.
You know, that nobody is running out in the middle of the night. We've talked about hotels where people are checking out at 2 a.m. because they just can't stand it. Nobody is having their covers ripped off. You know,
thank goodness.
Nobody is seeing weird messages written on their mirrors. You know, none of that. Okay. So those kind of experiences really seem to be few and far between when you start looking at the volume of people that come through some of these hotels over the years. You know, they have 4 or 5 really amazing stories, but thousands of guests, and you've only got maybe a handful of people that's ever actually experienced this. You know, you're like, oh, okay, you know, maybe not. You know, maybe somebody got a little excited. Maybe somebody's making it up, whatever. Mm-hmm. But when you consistently get these kind of experiences, even though they're not earth-shattering or terrifying, you really begin to wonder, could this be, if not General Quitman, another spirit of one of the numerous people that lived and worked in this mansion and on this property?
Yeah.
I think it really makes a lot of sense if it actually is equipment.
Well, I think so too, because of if you look at his history, everything he did in that house or tied to that house, he, like you said, loved it. Like this was a passion for him. So it makes sense to me that he would still be there looking over it in some way.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And it's pretty fascinating that all of the stories that come out of the Monmouth seem to be centered around this one particular spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we will talk about haunted locations, and sometimes there are dozens of different spirits that are involved. And there's really no way to attach one story to one particular spirit, because there's just so many. You know, this one's malevolent. You know, this one seems nice. This one disappears. This one wears white, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So you get all of these different encounters, and it's hard to pinpoint and say it's that spirit there, but you can hear. I mean, it's really seems
crazy,
like it's one
to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy to me that we don't have more. Like, all the people that passed through that, all the people that worked that land, everything. And we only have one guy that we pinpointed to.
What makes me, when you say that, I think that people that lived and worked around the Monmouth, you know, however, were generally content. I'm not necessarily going to say happy. I mean, I can't imagine that anybody that was enslaved and worked there was happy to be there.
Yeah.
But it does not seem that they were treated harshly in any, there's True. Not a lot of stories that, you know, he was a horrible taskmaster, or that he mistreated, you know, mm-hmm. the slaves that he had on his property. So not that it was good that he had them, but I mean, at least he treated them, you know, with some level of compassion. And because of that, I think there doesn't tend to be a negative sludge that's left there.
Right. That's a good point.
If you know, we've talked about other southern locations that were pre-Civil War that, you know, slaves were treated brutally, and many, many died. And there's, you know, a lot of activity, because all of that over time just left such a negative imprint on the land, on the home, whatever. And that doesn't seem to be the case with the Monmouth. So I think that's right. Probably why you don't see a lot of spirits lingering around. There's no stone tape that's holding on to that negative energy.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, people making it up. Well, I think the fact that we only have one guy kind of lends to it not having a lot of people making it up,
mm-hmm.
because when you're going to make something up, you might not know the history of the hauntings at that place, and you just make up something crazy.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of when we went to the Jefferson, and we stayed at the Jefferson. We were only one of two groups that were staying there that two nights that we were there. And you and I had already done like the research on it. So I knew what the hauntings were. And there was a group of two, like maybe college age girls staying there. And I was down in the like foyer area talking to the owner's wife about something. She had asked me a question as I went past, and then they came up, and I heard them telling her the story of something was written on our bathroom mirror last night. Da 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 da. That doesn't happen at the Jefferson. That has never happened at the Jefferson. Nobody's ever claimed that. We couldn't find anything when we did our research. And I'm like, y'all are making this crap up, and you're just trying to
get some attention, you know, fancy, stir things up. You know, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, people do it all the time.
Sure.
But I agree with you that if you were just embellishing something, you would tend to make it a little bit more frightening or, you know, much more dramatic, for people to go like, come down, check out the next day and say, man, we heard somebody walking around out in the hall all night long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who was that gentleman that was down at the end of the hall last night in the middle of the night? You know, he was just standing there, you know, maybe it's General Quitman.
Yep.
What do you guys think? I mean, do you buy into, I mean, Adam and I are just spitting out theories here. Do you think maybe this was a pretty low key place and General Quitman loved it? You know, it was his dream home and he's just quietly overseeing it now. Is it just not enough to convince you that the Monmouth is truly haunted? And maybe this is just something that, you know, it'd be cool if we restore this old antebellum home and make it a hotel and come up with a few ghost stories, you know, it'd be good. Yeah, right. You know, we could drum up some business, you know, is it something like that? You know, let us know. And for those of you who go, boy, I tell you what, that there's a lot of other haunted places in Natchez. Believe me, we know. And we're going to be talking about those places.
Stay tuned.
We're going to be covering some of these places. We are starting very mild tonight. So keep tuning in because these other places, they're not as quiet. But maybe you guys have been to the Monmouth. Maybe you've been through Natchez. I've been through Natchez. I've never been through the Monmouth, but I have been through the town. You know, it's a pretty unique place. Let us know what you think. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. We've got thousands of people in there. It's called The Graveyard. You know, sharing stories and experiences and jokes and everything. It's just a great group to be in. Don't forget to check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. And you can listen to the show. And that's where you can become a patron. And thank you so much to everybody who has donated to the work that Adam and I have done over the years. We sincerely appreciate it. And we absolutely could not keep doing it without your help. So thank you very much.
Oh, yeah.
So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.